Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back to another week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. Deer season is wrapped up. I think the cold weather seems thoroughly good and gone. I've been swatting mosquitoes and had to dig in my closet for my shorts this week. So I think that we are in full-blown fishing mode now for the next few months. And leading the charge this week, we got Justin Dunham down here on the Mobile Tensaw Delta here to talk to us a little bit about bass fishing. He was just telling me that with the warm weather, we're starting to potentially get into some pre-spawn. Is that right, Justin?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me, Nick. Here lately, ever since that big snow, I've been going out every weekend trying to see if I can see any signs of life. And seems like all the freshwater fish made it. Hadn't seen any fish kills on that end, but I know the mullet got hit pretty hard. But the week after that big snow, all the fish were freezing cold. I was just catching a handful of them, and I'd have to fish soft plastics real slow on the bottom. And this past weekend, the water had warmed up pretty decent. Like it, you know, back in its normal kind of temperature, I was able to catch them on crankbaits and chatterbaits and even topwater. So it seems like their activity level's back up after all that cold we had. And I was cruising the shallows up amongst the flooded trees in the swamp, trying to see if they were, you know, moving up to feed or moving up to get ready to spawn. And I haven't spotted any really shallow, but I did find a group of them that was, they were smashing these little minnows on top. And that was pretty fun to throw a wake bait in them.
Yeah, you know, I saw the same thing here in the past week, finishing up deer season, riding through the boat. I noticed in a couple of the lakes I was riding, you had some schools of fish, and you could see what I assumed were bass hitting them up pretty shallow. Now, you say flooded timber, it's been dry this year. Where are you seeing flooding in the swamp?
Well, it's a couple hours north from where we are. Some little swamps and oxbows that kind of permanently stay flooded. They've got some permanent flooding up there. I don't want to give the location out too specific, but
sure,
they stay flooded 24/7. Yeah, 12 months out of the year they're flooded.
Nice. Yeah, I knew it had to be somewhere different, because man, it has been super, super dry this year. I've been having trouble getting my boat in and out of some of these launches, and I've just got a little John boat, and I've noticed too, the water is a lot clearer, a lot closer to the river on these creeks. You know, usually you get far enough up in a creek and you'll get some water clarity, but that clarity is, you know, there's docks that I launch at that are usually kind of muddy, and you can see 4 or 5 feet down in the bottom. You know, you can just look down and see bait fish schooling and see beer cans on the bottom. So it's definitely been different. What in your mind, and it seems like we may be a little bit different this year. We had some extreme cold right there around the snowstorm, but overall we had a mild winter, and it's looking like early spring. You don't know till it's here, but when do you usually anticipate bass getting on the pre-spawn?
So I find that they pre-spawn like, you know, early March, and that spawn will keep going all the way through April pretty well. And seems to me like the spawn is usually finishing up in mid to late April. But usually around March, that's when I start looking for them pre-spawn. But it does change from year to year. And I think one thing that's kind of affected it this year is we've had that cold winter, and we really haven't had a big flood. You know, the river may have gone up just a touch, but it went right back down because it was already low. And like you say, the water clarity is a lot different than it usually is this time of year. Usually it's more muddy from all the flooding, but it looks like we may miss it this year.
I know, and I've talked with people who pay more attention to it than me, and every time I say that, they shake their heads and they say, oh no, we're going to get it. Like I talked to one guy who said that we may get it all the way into Easter, but yeah, it's been a really strange year so far. Have you noticed, has there been any difference, like any practical difference that it makes in fishing with the water being clearer down here? Because I know generally, you know, finesse fishing and, you know, like fluorocarbon leaders and stuff like that down here, like there's not much point in my mind. Like they're not going to see, you know, your terminal tackle. You'll be lucky if they see your lure. A lot of the time down here, it's so dingy. But
Right.
have you had to change your presentations any?
You know, fishing the upper delta, not really. Like even when it's clear, it still has that greenish kind of tinge to it. So it's still a little bit murky. It's not crystal clear. Now on the lower delta, yeah, you for sure need to pay attention to it. But on that upper delta, you could almost get away with just go a straight braid. But if you're in that lower stuff, for sure, you still need to pay attention to that fluorocarbon, tying your FG knots and all that stuff.
Yeah. What about, 'cause I know I always like talking to you 'cause you do a lot of creek browling, which is my favorite type of fishing. Have you been staying mostly on the bigger, more accessible waters, or have you been hitting some of them smaller creeks, little tributary feeder creeks, any?
Yeah, now another thing I did this past weekend, I have a little creek where I know some spotted bass like to hang out. I don't know if you saw my most recent video, but I know it's predominantly spotted bass in there. So I slipped off in that thing and paddled up river just a little bit. And those spotted bass, kind of like you say, the water was, it was more clear than it should be closer to the river. And those spotted bass were stacked up in that thing near the mouth. From about the mouth where it meets the river, about half mile in, and they were smashing top water pretty much the whole way through. And that's always fun. So those spotted bass are really active. So I have been doing a little bit of that. And if you know anywhere any creeks like that are, now is a good time to do it.
Man, that's what I've been looking forward to. I picked up a brand new 6 weight, and over the winter I've been tying some bass poppers here and there for the fly rod, so I'm looking forward to doing that. And I do know some creeks that hold spots that drain into the big rivers, so that's a good tip. Now that deer season's over, I might have to capitalize on that tip this weekend, because I really like getting after spots up in the creeks down here, if you know where to go for them.
Right. And I will give a little something away. So I believe it's the 23rd, which is a Sunday. They're going to open back up Chickasaw Park here in Mobile County. And usually early April, late March, early April, there's spotted bass up through there. And they'll run right across from that beach and all that where the park is. So if you have a boat or a kayak or something, you can slip in there and fish that far bank and you can end up with some pretty good spots depending on the day. And I've never caught one this big, but I heard someone tell me they caught one in there like 4 pounds a few years ago. But there are some big ones in there, so I'm prone to believe it.
We will have to go at some point fish that. When I was in college, I fished it a few times. I used to kayak it regularly. I think when I was going, they were kind of having some trouble. That place got a little bit rough there for a little bit, but I'm hoping with it being reopened, I know they've taken a lot of boat ramps and put a lot of funding into them over the years, and they've patrolled them pretty good. So I'm hoping that it looks like a nice facility. I'm hoping that they keep it clean. And I actually did see that they'd open that, and that's on my list of things to go hit, because it's been probably close to a decade since I've seriously hit that. I think I've hit it once or twice, because there's some other access points if you're willing to throw your boat in a hole, you know.
Right.
But yeah, it's a surprisingly pretty little creek for something that runs through the heart of Mobile.
It is. It depending on who you talk to, some people love it and some people don't like it. You know, some of the people that hang around there can be a little bit sketchy sometimes. But you know, the entry fee before they closed it was only $1, so
Right.
it's relatively cheap as far as you know access to be able to get in it. And there used to be that guard that would kind of patrol the area pretty regular. So your vehicle was always safe. I never had any problems there. And they closed it after COVID to renovate it.
Right.
But like I say, on the 23rd, it's supposed to open. They're going to have a big celebration. I don't know if I'll make that, but I may fish it a little after the 23rd because some of those oxbows and stuff that are off of the main creek, they hold pretty good bass, pretty good crappie. And if you can find them wherever they're bedded up, they hold pretty good brim too.
Yeah, like I said, I fished it a little bit back in the day, and there's a few other creeks that I'm gonna keep quiet for now that I've liked to fish in Mobile that are right there where you can hear the interstate go by. And I've had a lot of fun out through there. The only thing I will tell people is just be careful. There's an all species fish consumption advisory. Do not eat any through there. really high mercury levels in everything that they tested, catfish, bass, all that. So definitely a good catch and release fishery.
Right, yeah, I know they've had the sign on one of the poles there by the launch about not eating bass. They've had that sign up there for a while because of the high mercury. But
Yes,
yeah, that
sir.
is something to definitely be mindful of.
Yes, sir. Well, what's your big plans this year? I know I got to fish a tournament with you guys last year, and I enjoyed it, even though I did not do very well at all. I did phenomenal in the pre-fishing, and walked in with some high confidence that was shattered within about the first 30 minutes. We had the water levels completely change as they do down here, and it kind of blew me out. But I want to get back into it this year. What have y'all got planned this year on the little local kayak fishing tournament circuit?
Sure. So actually, you got two clubs starting up this coming up weekend. And gosh, let's see what day that is. It's the day after Valentine's Day. It is the 15th. Mobtown Kayak Bass Fishing, the Bass Club, is second stop of the year. That is going to be at Burns Lake over in Baldwin County. And it's going to be a five best five bass over 12 inches will take it home. And that's going to be a CPR style tournament. That's catch, photo, release. And they have a tournament going from January all the way through October. And it's usually that third weekend of the month, so third Saturday of the month. And then also starting next month, the MBKFA, they start their CPR tournament series as well. So that's another one if you're more into the inshore side of things. But this is a freshwater podcast, so most people are probably looking forward to that bass stuff more so than the saltwater. But both of them are good clubs and good series. So I would highly recommend both clubs if you're interested.
Absolutely. And you'd be surprised, man. Most of the people, I think I've talked with a lot of transplants especially, and one of the great things down here, even the freshwater guys, they like to dabble a little bit in salt water here and there just because it's there, you know, like that's something you don't have. I got a buddy and he's in Nashville now, but he grew up in Baton Rouge and he misses that tremendously, you know. And he didn't think that he would. He said, as long as I catch crappie, I'll be good. And then he's been up there for about 2 years and he's like, yeah, I miss being able to load up and go after specks and reds when the mood struck me. So.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a unpredictability to what you're going to catch. You know, whenever you hop that voodoo shrimp or that jerk shad in the water, you know, there's no telling if it's going to be a speck or even a shark or a flounder. It could be anything in that salt water.
Yeah, I have literally sat there in one spot where I was looking at the causeway, fishing in a boat, and caught bass, and then caught a little baby bull shark right there. And same place, caught specks, reds, you know, channel catfish, blue catfish, everything, just depending on what the tide was doing. So it definitely it adds element of fun up here where I'm at, you know, up in Stockton. We get a little bit of that every now and then. You hear rumors of, you know, sharks and stuff like that coming up this far. But man, down there around the causeway, you never know what you're going to get into.
Right. I know last year I saw some pictures that somebody posted saying they were catching flounder somewhere way up that Baldwin County in the river. I'm not too sure if they were pulling our legs, but the post seemed legitimate.
Yeah, and I think that I meant to do some digging on that, do a podcast episode on it, but there's a species of basically, I didn't know this, but there's like a freshwater flounder. I got to talking with a guy about it, and apparently you do get flounder come up river a little bit, but I forget the name of it, but it's basically like a sole or something like that goes all the way up to the dams on the rivers, and it's a very seasonal
Huh.
thing. Yeah, that's shame on me as a host for not digging into that because I thought that was just as cool as could be.
I wonder if that's the little flounder. I've heard them referred to as hog chokers.
Yep, that was it.
It's just a small species of flounder. Okay. Yeah, I did not know that they went that far up. That's pretty good to know.
Yep, that's what the guy was telling me. I'm trying to see here. A sole is I think what I'm on the Outdoor Alabama website looking at it now, and the distribution. Fresh water penetrating to the Coffeyville Lock and Dam on the lower Tombigbee and well upstream of Claiborne Lock and Dam on the Alabama. So actually north of
Wow.
the dam at Claiborne. Yeah. I need to
That
put that on my bucket list. I like catching weirdos like that. Like last year I made a pilgrimage to go and catch a red horse sucker here in the headwaters of the Perdido River, and took me 2 or 3 days to figure out how to make them eat, but I need to
Right.
go figure out how to catch me a sole.
So I've got another weird one you might be interested in. Did you know we have yellow perch around here?
Man, I have heard that for a long time, and I've seen pictures of them, talked with people, but I've never caught one now.
Well, that creek we were just talking about for the spotted bass, it's got them in it.
Well,
I can I
we
can
may have.
probably drop you a pin to where they spawn at, because they spawn around weeds and lily pads.
Yeah.
And if you fish it enough in the afternoon, right before dark, eventually you'll hook up with one, because they are in there about 9 to 10 inches long.
We will definitely have to trade some spots. If you like spotted bass, I know one of the prettiest little spotted bass fisheries around down here, and I would love to go up there and catch one just to put that notch in my belt and say I did it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, we can make that happen.
Absolutely. Well, Justin, always good to have you on the show. Folks listening in, y'all be sure to check out Justin's got one of my favorite YouTube channels, 8 Mile Drifter. He puts out really good content. It's really clean, professionally done. And I don't know about y'all, but it's always a bit of a turn off to me when fishing videos are what I'll call overly hyped and edited. It's real simple. It's just kind of kayak fishing. Really good audio quality, catches a lot of fish. And there's a bare minimum of what's up, bro, intros on there. So it's one of my favorite YouTube channels.
I appreciate that, Nick. Thank you for the kind words, and I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, sir. And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by. Alrighty, guys. Next up, we're going to swing up north of the Tennessee River. We're talking with Andy Witten today. Andy, how you doing this evening?
Man, I'm doing good. How are you?
Man, just recuperating from deer season. Got me some Milka or some Epsom salts to soak my muscles in. Been trying to rehydrate and catch up on sleep and just get ready, get over the whooping I put on myself that last week of deer season and get ready to go slip around in some creeks a little bit. So, how about yourself?
About the same, man. Like I said, I didn't really get to deer hunt much this year, but what little bit I did do, completely wrecked my brain. I run a bunch of cameras. I was running probably, I don't know, close to 15, 20 cameras this year, and then only got to hunt about 4 times. So it's just been sitting home thinking too much.
They will definitely do it to you in them cameras. I ran them a little bit in college and then stayed away from them. And then this year ran about six. And I'll probably build back up to, I don't think I'd want to run more than a dozen. Probably wouldn't be good for my health.
It's
Probably
not.
wouldn't be good for my wallet paying for the data plans either. But
No.
it's definitely different, man. Times change, and I'd have never thought I'd have been a cell camera guy. But yeah,
I didn't
20.
either.
If you run in 20, you've done caught the bug.
Yeah, I'm bad. Which a lot of those are regular SD. I still run a
Sure.
lot of SD cameras, but I've got probably Super 7, good old Tacticams.
Well, now that that's over and we're both licking our wounds, if it makes you feel better, I didn't really shoot any deer this year either. I think I shot one spike that I really shot for a buddy who also had a new baby and didn't do a lot of deer
Didn't get
hunting this
the
year.
deer.
I gave him a charity deer, and I'm kind of like you. I'm over it. Like, it hurt my brain, it hurt my body, it hurt my feelings, most importantly, and I'm kind of looking forward to wiping the dust off my feet and moving on with spring. I'm sitting here at my work desk slash fly tying desk, and I'm looking at a bunch of rubber legs and foam bodies and a brand new tube of brush on super glue and a hair stacker. I got some stuff to tie. I was telling Andre Davis last week, I got stuff to tie some big nymphs for bluegill.
Yeah.
Got me some new fly line that I just spooled up last week and cleaned up and stretched, and I haven't even put a cast on it yet. It's just sitting there waiting for me to go out there and hit the little farm pond that's usually my first stop every year, where I try to remember how to tie an improved clinch knot and all that. So what's your pregame warm-up ritual look like? What you been doing getting ready for it?
I mean, I've just been tying fly after fly. I've been tying some up for my boy Pete. I'd actually you brought up Andre. I messaged Andre last night and told him and Paul Terry that we needed to go fishing this year for some pre-spawn smallies. But other than that, man, I've just been tying flies and getting ready to fish, thinking about fishing. Bunch of game changers. I've been on a game changer kick. I really want to get into the nymph game. Because I just like to branch out. You're talking about nymphs, but I've seen some people, man, that know how to work a nymph for a really big smallmouth. Old Wade Blevins. Wade Blevins blew my mind one time catching I don't know, he was a giant smallmouth on a tiny little nymph, and it broke into my brain, and it's been digging its way ever since. But
So I won't say that I've ever caught big ones, but I can just tell you, as many nymphs as I have drifted past the cypress knees down here on some of the little sandy bottom, the little blackwater creeks that feed our rivers, I've drifted a lot of nymphs, little pheasant tails and stuff like that, past some undercut banks. And yeah, sometimes it'll surprise you
it will, man.
what hits that little nymph.
It will. That's like, that purple woolly booger that I told you about. It's on a size 4, and it's caught me more big mamas than anything.
Yeah, I caught a nice Choctaw bass last year, and I had been doing, the popper thing early in the morning. And I was like, well, that kind of dried up. And it's like, should I go back and be a productive member of society, or should I kill another couple of hours? And long story short, I switched over to drifting a little size 10 olive bugger that I had. I think it was just a one-off fly that I had left over from something that I'd bought when I first started. I had one little beadhead woolly bugger and a little size 10, not much bigger than a crappie jig, and I was catching some panfish on it, and then it went under, and it was, I thought for a second it'd been hung. Like, I give it a pop and nothing happened, and I went to give it a, like, I was getting ready to walk upstream and try to unstick it, And then about that time it took off past my knees downstream, and
Good.
oh yeah, it was a fish. He broke 20 inches, which down here on the little creeks that you
Wow.
wade, a 20-plus inch fish is a good fish.
That's a gift from God there, buddy.
Yeah, no, that was, and then once it took off, I'm just like, man, I hope this little teeny tiny hook don't want to wear a hole in his mouth, or like, I don't know how he's hooked, and it caught him about perfect right there in the bony part, that little cartilage rim on his jaw. Like, he was hooked just as perfect could be.
That's wild.
Yeah.
This one of the instances where you wish you had another barb.
Yeah, that's it. Some people crimp a barb, and I'd like to figure out how to put a second one on there some days.
Yep, exactly. I never crimp a barb unless I have to legally.
Well, and
That's it.
I don't know much about it. I don't claim to know a whole lot, but I can see looking at trout and just looking at the mouth on a trout, and I can see that. But man, paper mouth fish like we got, and crappie, or that's what they call them, is paper mouths. But
Yeah.
panfish and bass got that same paper mouth, and I feel like that barb helps a little bit. And unless you really deep hook one, and I've just found fly fishing, like, they don't swallow it as much as they do other baits, Like, they'll swallow a plastic worm, they'll definitely, swallow live bait, but I don't know, it's not like a treble hook, I just don't feel like you're tearing them up that bad.
Lot of them get around the corner of the mouth or in the end of the mouth and on a fly. I've had a few that will, like on top water flies, mostly they'll try to inhale that thing, but other than that, most of the time flies don't get that deep, like you said.
No, I think it's definitely easier on them than I've caught a bunch of them over the years on baits that had the double trebles, and yeah, that's a little rough on the fish. You sit there and
Yeah.
he gets to shaking his head, and next thing you know, he's got one in his mouth, and he's got one in his gill plate, and you got one in your thumb, and
Yeah, it's not good.
yeah, it turns into a bit of a
Yeah.
cluster. But Yeah, man, I've been stocking up. I've not been stocking up like I should be, but I've been knocking out a couple ties every evening. Mostly, I've got some yellow poppers. I need to get one of the good doctors, Matt Lewis's. I need to get one of his new stickers he's selling. Any
Oh, yeah,
color,
I've seen that.
any color popper will work as long as it's yellow. So
Long yellow.
I got me some yellow poppers tied up, and I've got a couple other patterns. You was talking about tying game changers. I've been looking at some of the articulated flies, and was honestly thinking about dipping my toe into that with like an articulated woolly bugger pattern, just so I was only trying one new technique at a time.
Yeah.
What I know I've seen, and I've actually got it sitting here on my desk. I got a little picture that I printed out on some printer paper of your bugger, that purple
That
bugger
purple
with
one, yeah.
with the cone head and the big poofy tail, and that looks like Estes on it.
Yep.
I got that one on the list to tie. What's your other go-tos?
Oh man, I like if I could have five flies, it'd probably be it'd definitely be that crystal bugger. It'd be a simple like crafter minnow. I really like a slump buster too, but I only like slumps and yellow. I've never really had much luck with all the other ones, but just yellow for some reason works. Definitely a popper. I like them Paul Terry poppers, them double barrels. And then I'm gonna have to go with that ribbit roll, man, that John Lower does. That thing is a goat.
You know, I saw that when it I guess first debuted, or I think it ended up featured in Fly Tire magazine or something like that, and I heard a couple of local guys talking about it, and I need to tie one up. I like it. We have a bunch down here in the swamp. I could probably, it's probably warm enough now, I could go up right now on my back porch light and probably grab a dozen tree frogs.
Oh man, I'm
Yeah.
jealous. It's still cold here, cold and raining.
Oh man, no, it's been highs have been dipping into the 80s up here. I'd love to get some cold weather. But yeah, I don't have a good frog pattern that I like. And I was looking at that one, and I feel like I could throw that on a six weight pretty good
Oh
without doing the old chuck and duck.
yeah, I like it. I mean, I throw it on a 6 weight glass rod. That rod and that frog is probably my favorite thing to catch smallmouth on. That glass rod and that frog is just insane.
Yeah.
But it's real light, man. It's in all honesty, I know John personally, fish with John, but and that frog right there is just it's incredible.
Yeah, it don't look like it weighs anything, and then just the design of it looks like it would push water really
Yeah.
well.
It does, man, and it don't it'll pop, but I like the way I like to use it, man, is I like to splat it, just splat it down on top of the water as hard as I can, and wait, 3 or 4 seconds, kind of strip it a little bit, do it again, strip it a little bit, pick it up, plop it back down, and
Yeah.
so that plop is what gets them, I think.
Are you, they seem to be kind of hard to locate. I haven't seen anybody that sold them online. Are you picking yours up from somebody up there local, or are you just tying them
I get them straight from John.
straight from John?
Yeah, that's
Nice.
where I get mine at. I believe they're being sold now at the Orvis in Huntsville, up there at Bridge Street. I believe, pretty sure
Okay.
that's where they're at. And I don't know if you'll be able to find them when you go there, but if not, you can kind of keep an eye on John on Facebook or Instagram, and he'll post a batch of them up, and then just reply as quick as possible.
Yeah, I'd like to throw a few of those in the rotation. I know I went by the Orvis in Birmingham last time I rolled through there. It was actually a duck hunt, coming back from a duck hunt in Decatur up there on that Swan Creek dewatering unit, and I stopped in, stretched my legs, and grabbed lunch, and I bought me some sinking leaders that I've been playing with. I've been wanting to get on a got on the bucket list this year. I want to catch some black crappie. Or excuse me, white crappie. We got blacks here in the delta that I'm at, but I want to go up river a little bit, and I want to catch some white crappie on a fly rod.
That'd be nice, man.
Yeah, I've caught some black crappie. I'd like to get on some white crappie, and I feel like I got a really fast sinking leader that I feel like may get me down on them. here as they start coming up shallow, and I need to move. Now it's about the time to actually go do that thing I've been planning. But they didn't anyway. I stopped through Birmingham. They didn't have them at the one in Birmingham. But if you say they got one in Huntsville, I may have to figure out a reason to make a trip up there before spring is in full swing and everybody's cleaned the shelves out up there.
Cleaning them out, yep.
Yep. I know that's the thing down here, our little local fly shop. Right about now, you can go in there and they've got their boogle bugs in, and you wait till March to go get them, and it'll just be all the no good colors. They'll have
Yeah.
orange and, green, and they won't have yellow, and they won't have white, and they won't have black, and they won't have blue. So they'll have the second string colors.
Better than nothing, I guess. But I used to fish boogle bugs a lot, man. And then I got out of them because I guess this isn't any shots toward boogle bug, or whatever. But I kept breaking them all the time. I'd buy a new one and it wouldn't last me a day. So I like them Paul Terry poppers to replace it, but.
Yep, I got into when I first started, Matt Lewis got me into buying some, and I still fish them, and I got really fond of the small ones, the little size eights.
Those small ones are thin.
That's probably my favorite. Just, I would love to live a life where that's all that I ever threw, because it was always good topwater fishing on skinny water backwaters. But I did start tying my own with a foam body. And so far they seem to catch fish just as good, and they may be a little bit more durable, especially if you get up there a few hours north of me where y'all got rocks. That cork sometimes that's usually been the demise of mine, is you hit that cork off that rock one too many times, and
It's gone.
that foam lasts a little bit longer. Usually if I lose one of them, it's because I actually lost it. It's because a big old bowfin or something done grabbed it and run up under a log down here on the river.
That's one thing I've always dreamed of on a fly rod, man, as a bow fan.
Well, we're gonna have to trade a trip. You're gonna have to let me come up there and catch smallmouth, and I can definitely put you in places where you can, if you're lucky, you can sight fish for them down here. And it's a humbling experience, though.
Yeah.
That's a tricky fish, and then if you do hook him, trying to get a hook in them is pretty difficult. It's pretty hard to
Pretty
get them
rare.
to bite. Yep, you're gonna get maybe one out of every 5 or 10 to bite, and then out of that, you're gonna get about one out of every 5 or 10 you get a good hook in. So,
Wow.
but if
Wow.
you get that hook in him, that's an intense 60 seconds. What follows next will make you glad that you're not a bait fish living in the creek.
Yeah, absolutely, man. They've got a there's some ponds down here up off the river, and they've got some bowfin in it. A buddy of mine used to go right at daylight and catch bowfin out of this pond, and I tried like 5, 6 times, get there before daylight, nothing.
I can tell you what I've had the best luck with is, and I mean, they'll hit top water every now and then, but they definitely, catching them consistently, what I found out is if you're crawling a bass worm on the bottom, I noticed that you caught a bunch of bowfin. And if you get something like that crystal bugger that you tie, drug on the bottom down here, would catch bowfin for sure. Like something hopping along on the bottom, they'll get it.
Don't get it.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, they, and I found that out too. You catch a lot of them catfishing if you catfish with live bait. That's when I first started to put two and two together, because that's a fish that there's not a lot of information out there about compared to other stuff. I mean, you can read you everything that you I think you could possibly write about bass fishing has been written at this point.
Oh, yeah, 10 times.
Yeah, it's all been covered. Like it's more a matter of sifting through the not so great information to get to really good stuff, and to a certain extent, I got the Book of the Black Bass sitting here on my bookshelf, and I feel like a lot of what needed to be written got written back in the 1880s, and we've just been updating it every few years. But bowfin, not a lot of information. David Graham, we've had him on the podcast, and he's got some info on them. But I know there's a handful of people that fly fish for them, but that's a thing that's been fun. I've kind of had to figure that out as I went. And one of the first times I figured out how to get on big ones consistently was getting in a creek back here and fishing on the bottom for flatheads, and I found out that the bowfin were definitely getting in the way of the flathead fishing. And at first I was upset about it, and then I just rolled with it, and started catching some, 10-pound fish, which is pretty
Wow.
fun. You get a bowfin big enough to swallow a whole bluegill, and
Yeah.
you'll be pretty happy with that. So
Absolutely, man. Them spawning colors on them bad boys it's just incredible.
yeah, that like toxic green that they get on them, yeah, it's real cool. We
Yeah.
I never remember to mark my calendar for it, but I always end up just, it seems like I always catch them on the tail end of that. And I need to get some better pictures of it. Last year I did get a little male who had real good colors. He wasn't big, he's a 2-3 pound fish, but
Yeah.
he was really green. And it looks like a color. It really looks like somebody dipped him in dye. Like
Really does.
it's not a natural color at all. Like it looks like he got that dye that they use to chase leaks in a water system or something on him.
Yes, yeah, some kind of radioactive green blue color, you know.
Yeah. First time I ever saw one, I went to wipe that off of him.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I'll definitely trade you a trip though, for real, for some
Well,
bear fins, man.
so speaking of spawn, I know we just had Justin Dunham on there and on the podcast, and he was talking about how we were getting, not quite hitting pre-spawn. Like he's at the point now where he's kind of checking in on them every weekend, right, to see if they're up in the shallows. And
Yeah.
he says they're not quite here yet down here. The largemouth down here on the coast aren't there. When do you think y'all will be hitting pre-spawn up there on the Tennessee River? Or you think y'all are already there or got a few weeks?
Nah, so for us, it's usually last year it was about the second week of April for me. I've seen it as early as the last week of March, but most of the time it takes April for us to get the smallmouth on bed here.
I got you. Nice. Well, that's good. That's something I enjoy. It's kind of like the rut, spread out
Yeah.
down here. It seems like I've heard people say you can start to get crappie spawn in February, and then between by the time you get through, by the time the bluegill get done spawning, I swear they keep that going until September some years, it feels like. So
I
that's
feel the same way about bluegill, man. They seem like they're spawning all the time. Never
Yeah.
quit.
Yeah, I've found beds before that I just assumed were old beds from last year,
Yeah.
until you start fishing them, and there they are.
There they are.
That's it. Well, man, good talking to you. At some point, I'll have to make a trip up there and tie a fly with you and catch a fish. And like I said, you got to stand an invite. You make it down here to the beach. You'll have to
Ooh.
come up and hang a fly on a cypress knee with me.
I'll definitely do it, man. Anytime I can get down that way, I'll definitely do it.
Yes, sir.
Because I've been needing to branch out a little bit sometimes, with God and all that. Sometimes you want to get out, get away.
That's it. Well,
Quit
hey,
thinking about
that's
smallmouth.
it. You can come down here, and I'll be the one to paddle the canoe and pack the lunch. And I'm not going to promise I'm going to tie flies on for you and let you fish my rod if you hang yours. But
No.
I can guide for a day, give you a break.
Yeah, that'll work. That'll work.
Andy, always good hearing from you.
You too, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. We're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by. Get ready for the 73rd Annual Mobile Boat Show presented by the Keesler Federal Credit Union, March 14th through 16th at the Mobile Convention Center. Explore the newest 2025 boat models from top dealers across Alabama, Florida, and Mississippi. Compare brands side by side and connect with over 100 vendors offering everything from on-site financing, electronics and boat lifts, to fishing gear, apparel, and more. Enjoy daily seminars from local experts, live marine touch tanks, and even see Twiggy the skiing squirrel. Plus, don't miss Kids Fishing 101 and the Pride of the South tournament weigh-in. For tickets and info, visit gulfcoastshows.com/mobile or email melissa at gulfcoastshows.com. Week, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, it's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks manufacture a variety of metal roofing systems to meet your needs. Whether you're putting a new roof on your home or sheeting a commercial building, they have you covered. Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks, your metal roofing headquarters. Also brought to you by BucksIsland.com. Bucks Island has been in business since 1948 for all of your new and used boat needs, as well as motor sales and service, and now they have a pro-level tackle store. Boat and motor trade-ins are welcome. Visit them online at BucksIsland.com or give them a call at 256-442-2588. Also brought to you by, did you know every 40 seconds someone has a heart attack or stroke? In that moment, every second counts and every critical decision matters. Air Medcare Network's air ambulance providers can bring life-saving care directly to those in need at a moment's notice. With 320 locations across 38 states, Air Medcare is the largest air ambulance network. Rest assured, they've got you and your entire household covered. Membership is just $99 a year or just $79 for seniors. Visit gdo.com/airmedcare to enroll.